You're listening to the Uplifting Content Podcast with Ione Butler. Join me every Tuesday to hear conversations with remarkable guests on a wide range of topics. The goal with this podcast is to introduce you to new ideas and techniques that will inspire and uplift you. Today, let's talk about the importance of boundaries with Brian Reeves.
My boundary was being violated so often in relationship. There was a boundary of my partner assuming she knows what I'm thinking or feeling or what my agenda is. And so naturally I would be in my defense because I know that what she's saying isn't true for me.
Right.
But rather than just standing for the boundary of like, look, that's what you're doing right now is not okay.
You don't
know what I'm feeling or thinking. And so stop. That's not helpful. And drawing that boundary, I wouldn't do that.
A former U.S. Air Force captain turned author, coach, and speaker, Brian has triumphed through multiple dark nights of the soul after hurling himself into the transformational fires of intimate relationships. With a master's degree in human relations, Brian coaches men, women, and couples in creating thriving lives and relationships. Brian is the author of the viral blog Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her, which actually sounds really smart, and two books on Amazon, including his latest, Tell the Truth, Let the Peace Fall Where It May. I'm excited for you to hear this week's episode because I had so much fun and got so much out of my conversation with Brian. We spoke about how Brian used to be completely disconnected from his body and emotions, especially during his time in the military. Reasons why some of us might not have boundaries. Brian's journey connecting back to himself and with others. How he began his work and helping people with their boundaries. The difference between codependence, interdependence, and independence. His Conflict to Connection program, and also his Boundaries program, which he's offered to give away to one lucky winner of the Uplifting Content Podcast. You can find the link to sign up to that giveaway in the show notes. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. If you haven't already, please subscribe wherever you're listening to your podcasts. And if you like the show, please leave a review. If you take a picture of your review and email it to us at info@upliftingcontent.com, we will send you a little gift to say thank you. Here's this week's episode. Enjoy the show.
Brian, how are you doing this morning?
I'm well. Ione. Ione. I want to say it the British way, not the American nasally. Ione.
Thank you. Ione. Thanks nice for getting the pronunciation right.
Glad to be here.
We were stretching it out this morning when we first got on the call, which is important. Stretching is important.
That's right.
But you know what else is important? Boundaries. Brian, I was saying to you, I'm really excited about having this conversation because it, for no other reason than boundaries are just super important and something that not many people think about or talk about or are taught about. But before we get into why they are so important, can you begin by just sharing a bit about your story, who you are, and how you came to do this work?
Yes. So I am 45 years now, exquisitely aged as a man.
Like a fine planet. Wine. Like a
very fine, maybe a little spoiled, but no, very fine. Deep, rich wine. And, but I came through, in my early years, growing up as a boy, but also then I went into the military. I was in the military essentially from the age of 17 to 26, like the formative years of my life. And those years were very painful and very disconnecting, you know, disconnecting from my body. I mean, culture was already working at that to disconnect me from, as a boy, from my feelings and emotions, and the military took it to just, you know, the extreme level. And so, you know, I came out of that at age of 26. I was very educated, you know, I had an undergraduate degree in electrical engineering, a minor in math. And then I got a master's when I was in the military, a master's degree in human relations and organizational development. So studying more of the humanities. And so 26 years old and completely very, very educated, very skilled, but completely unprepared to do relationship with a woman. Intimate relationship with a woman. And I got three sisters, by the way, and two moms, you know, a mom and a stepmom. You would have thought if anyone could do intimate relationship well with a woman, it should be this guy.
Right.
And I was a disaster. I had great intentions, great respect for women because of my sisters and moms, but no idea what a woman wanted from me in intimacy.
Right.
And so, but there I go from my, you know, 26 out of the military and on, and you know, for the next easily 10 years, I just kept making a mess out of love over and over and over again. I traveled around. I mean, look, there's all kinds of story here, and we don't have a lot of time, but that's essentially, you know, I think a really, really important part of my background. I didn't know anything about boundaries. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about how to create connection with mm-hmm. someone, really embodied connection, certainly not with a woman. Mm-hmm. I didn't even trust other men for that matter. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, I mean, again, growing up in a really hyper masculine and going through that hyper masculine experience of the military, it's like we kind of learn, okay, I can trust you if my life is on the line.
Right.
But if my marriage is fucked up, I can't let you into that. Hmm. You know, or if I'm feeling scared or lonely or afraid or like I don't know what I'm doing, nah, I can't tell you that. Can't tell anyone, you know. So it's having that experience of feeling incredibly isolated as a man in particular, and yet being surrounded by people and being in intimate relationship with women, like what the hell is that?
Yeah.
What is that? And so, you know, my journey, especially these last 10 years, really since I turned 36, when my final sort of the last major significant relationship just completely imploded and brought me to my knees. And I finally started asking the question, okay, what the hell am I missing? It's clearly not about the women anymore. They're not the ones who are all the fucked up ones, is what I thought. Mm-hmm. No. Okay. What's going on over here that, you know, no, someone should have told me that no one ever taught me.
Yeah.
And that really launched me in these last 10 years into just a remarkable journey. And, you know, now I'm with my fiance 4 years into an extraordinary relationship. And, you know, we continue to do our work, and she's a marriage and family therapist. I'm a relationship coach, and we see a therapist. We have our own coaches, you know, we keep doing the work, but boy, makes all the difference.
Wow. So much to that. And I just want to jump back quickly to what you were saying about the military. And it was one of those places where it kind of cut you off from your emotions even more. Like, why do you think that is? And does it serve people? Like, I mean, I'm assuming it's because to a degree, I don't know. Does it serve people there? Do you see that it would ever be something that would change?
Here's what I really understood and understand about this. A kind of a simple way of putting it is, and culture in general does this, but the military knows sort of intuitively that you can't take life when you feel connected to life.
Ah, wow. Yeah.
And I want to qualify that, because actually, you know, there are, you know, masculine energy is, you know, that protective energy can take life. You know, I would kill to protect my woman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what our culture does, and what the military also is an extension of, is we don't necessarily kill to protect our family. We kill to protect our money.
Right.
You know, we kill to protect our interests that are greed based, that are very ego based. They're not, I would say, largely heart connected. And I think that's the great quandary that we find ourselves in is, you know, there is a need for defense. There is a need for protection. There is a need for an army, for a military, but the way that, that it's done, you know, the, our warrior energy has been commandeered to serve a kind of tyrant king.
Right. Right.
And that's brutal for, you know, our kind of innate knowing that this isn't what we came here for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of us men, and women too, but, you know, speaking as a man, a lot of us men, we don't know what the hell to do with that aggression, that power, because it's like, it seems like we got two choices. Either we just use that aggression to do damage
mm-hmm.
in our own self-interest, which that doesn't feel good ultimately, or we just disconnect from the aggression, disconnect from feeling anything. And we just, you know, we might be in the room, but you can't feel us.
Wow. That is such a deep, profound, like you just blow my mind with that. That can be a whole other episode in itself just about, because that completely makes sense. And it's sad, but like, just that distinction between killing to protect, but then that's not really always what the things are about these days. So but cool. Thank you for explaining your perspective on that. You kind of had this kind of big breakup, and it sent you to your knees. And so what did you start doing to sort of learn these things, to sort of change and get an understanding of boundaries?
Yeah.
And when did you figure out that it was the boundaries that was what was missing?
Well, gosh, when did I figure out it was boundaries? I think it's a great question. I'm not sure when sort of the boundaries awareness came online. I think I've always been very internally boundaried, but it was never something I would ever talk about with a partner. Never, ever. So I think all of us have a sense of when our boundaries are being violated. Mm-hmm. We just don't have that language for it. We just know, I don't like what I'm experiencing. This is horrible. And instead of just acknowledging, I don't like what I'm experiencing. And there's a few reasons why we don't, well, I want to say talk about boundaries, but don't even have them. Mm. You know, one of the reasons is it's never been modeled for us. Mm. No one ever models. Our parents are generally weren't good models of boundaries for us, generally speaking. We've been also taught that boundaries are just selfish. They're not loving. At least that's one of the messages I got, you know, growing up was, you know, if you want to be a loving person, you have to let people walk all over you. Was kind of sort of, you know, be willing to be taken advantage of. What the fuck? You know, but that was the programming that I got. You know, that's what love does. Love lets people just walk all over you and you stay in there, be unconditionally loved.
Yeah, yeah. You work through it.
And then the third one is, I mean, there's probably many, but another really significant reason why we often don't have boundaries. And I mean, you know, even strong, independent, you know, people when we're single, men and women, we're single, we're rocking it, you know, we're succeeding in business or as an entrepreneur or whatever it looks like. And then we get into intimacy and we lose ourselves and shit starts happening that we can't make sense of. And our codependencies come out and all that stuff. Well, you know, one of the other reasons is we don't feel we're worthy of our boundaries.
Whoa, yeah.
Right? The lack of worthiness. I don't deserve to want what I want or to feel what I feel, et cetera.
And then maybe if I say what it is that I want, then they'll leave.
Absolutely. Mm. We're afraid. And the reality is if we have boundaries, someone who is unable or unwilling to meet us in those boundaries, they might leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that feels like, you know, when we're born as babies, we don't have boundaries. We can't have boundaries. I mean, we literally are a piece off of our mother. You know, we're literally part of our mom walking around all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And if our mom or dad were to leave us, or any caretaker, if we don't have some caretaker kind of merging with us and really, really showing up for us, we will die.
Yeah.
And our nervous systems get tuned to that story. If this person who cares for me leaves, I'm going to physically die. Mm-hmm. And we carry that into adulthood. And that's why it feels like, oh my God, if I break up with this person, I'm going to fucking die.
Right.
It feels like death. It's not, but it feels like, and look, in a way it is kind of a death. I mean, we lose a relationship. Even if, you know, I had a friend of mine call me just a few days ago and 3 weeks with a guy, and suddenly he disappears and things are going well, 3 weeks, and she's devastated. Mm. And I get it. I mean, there's so much that even in that, the hopes and dreams of what could have been has to die. We have to let go. And we're not good at grieving in this culture.
Right. That's definitely something that needs to be worked on too, learning how to grieve.
So, I mean, you know, these are reasons that, again, boundaries are just, there's a lot of obstacles in our way.
Yeah.
We're having boundaries. And that's why, you know, it's such a core part of my work today. Again, still even in my own relationship. I mean, certainly with the people that I work with, but it's still my practice because I've got lots of, you know, decades of momentum in the direction of not standing up for myself in these subtle ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So.
So still a couple of questions then of like, what was your, did you start, what was your journey into this like work? Did you start seeing a therapist or a coach or like, were you doing that? And then, and then maybe this is kind of related to it. Like, how do we go from like being that baby that needs someone to love us and take care of us for survival to being adults and saying, I don't need this. Like, I would rather be in a healthy relationship with boundaries than just need to be with someone.
So the first part of that is when I was 36 and this relationship was imploding, I'd been with this woman for 5 years and it was chaotic and wonderful and horrible and abusive. And it was awful and exquisite all at the same time, but more awful. It was exquisitely awful. And, somebody put a book in my hand. I was actually on tour with a music band that I was managing at the time. And somebody that we met along the road put a book in my hand. And that book was Way of the Superior Man by David.
Wow. Lee. Yeah, I kind of love and hate this book at the same time.
I get it. I understand. I mean, there's a lot of depth to the work and it can be interpreted in many different ways. But that book, essentially what that book and what David's work really opened up for me was a whole, you know, I'd been very much kind of a spiritual seeker.
Yes.
And one of the things that I realized, you know, if you look at the yin yang symbol, which I used to just think, oh, that'd be a cool tattoo or a nice necklace to wear. I had no connection to that symbol whatsoever. You know, it's for hippies, that symbol, or hippies or I guess, you know, ancient practitioners of something. I don't know. But what David's book, even though he doesn't use that symbol at all, but in my own exploration, what that really opened up for me exactly was that all of my spiritual seeking had been what I call at the level of the circle, the oneness. Mm-hmm. Nobody taught me or was talking about what the hell was going on inside that circle.
Right.
You know, the yin and the yang, the masculine and the feminine. Nobody was waking me up to that. There was, so it was like, if you look at it, like my kind of circle of experience, it was all masculine. The masculine was running all over everything. It was the ink blot was, there was very little feminine room for the feminine in my circle. So, you know, I was very much on a spiritual journey. I was very much, you know, researching and practicing all kinds of sort of, you know, spiritual perspective ideas, but nobody was teaching me how to be in my body.
Right. And it's the feminine, what I'm just want to confirm that you're meaning that in that circle, as in the feminine in yourself, like definitely those qualities and energies within yourself. Yeah.
Within me. That's right. Absolutely within myself. And if I'm going to deny my own feminine nature and essence, there's no way I'm going to be able to embrace it in a woman. And I'm attracted to women. I partner with women and, you know, and the type of women that I've always been attracted to, and certainly my partner is women who brings a lot of that more feminine essence. And if I'm denying it in me, there's no way in hell I'm going to be able to embrace all that she's bringing.
Right.
And that was really, I mean, that's, you know, one way of saying that, you know, or one way of looking at the crux of all the problems that I was experiencing in relationship. I had no relationship to real feminine energy, but I also was deeply disoriented around my own masculine energy. And that's what David's work really opened up for me.
So then you began that connection to yourself, feelings, the feminine qualities.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I just began seeing all the ways, you know, I would have flashbacks to, even in that 5-year relationship, I would have flashbacks to moments where I could see this woman who I wanted so badly to love. And I did love, but I had no idea how to connect with her, what she wanted from me. And I was all in my righteousness. You know, I could just have so many moments where I just see my arms crossed and I'm just so sure of my position. And I would flash back and I would see her sitting there in these various moments and so heartbroken. And, you know, to this day, there's certain moments, even in this moment, I can just flash back to moments. You know, there's a moment where we were in a stairwell somewhere in an apartment building in Miami. And again, I'm in that, you know, self-righteous mode, just so convinced of the righteousness of my logic. Mm-hmm. And I see her sitting there and look, she didn't behave well. Both of us, we were children. Neither one of us knew what the hell we were doing, but I can see, and we both acted unskillfully.
Yeah.
And that's a word I love to use. I don't like to use right and wrong, good and bad, skillful and unskillful. Those are the words that I really, because we can learn these skills.
Yeah,
and I had no skills.
Yeah.
And my lack of skillfulness, oh my God, it still to this day breaks my heart when I look back at those moments and see that there was just a woman in pain. And I had no idea. I was so focused on my own righteousness and my own suffering or my own shame, whatever was happening there for me. I couldn't just be with this person in front of me who was in pain. And it, to this day, it still breaks my heart.
Now you are more skillful. Tell me what you would have done in that moment in the stairwell, knowing what you know now.
So first I would have dropped my arms.
Yeah.
I would have, instead of crossing my arms, I would have dropped them. I would have taken a few deep breaths. Kind of work with my own body, my own nervous system first, right? Come kind of get back into my body. And I do this sometimes because I still have that pattern. That's still that pattern of when with my partner, we agree in a moment and I know you froze a little bit, but I'm assuming that the recording's still going. So, you know, I still have those moments where I can feel my righteousness arise and I want to cross my arms and sort of defending my position. And I know that no good comes from that. You know, no good solutions come from a state of disconnect.
Yeah.
So I would, in those moments, as I do today, I would drop my arms by my side. I'll turn towards her rather than what I'm probably oriented away from her, because again, I'm defending myself. Yeah. I'm not facing her because I don't want to be attacked is my mindset. So I'd face her, take a few deep breaths, watch my tone of voice. And then I would just say, look, I know this is a really horrible moment, but I want you to know I'm here with you. And we're going to figure this out together. I know this sucks right now. I can see that you're really hurting, and I'm hurting too. But I want you to know we're in this together. Mm. You know, and I just let that land in me as much as in her. And, you know, I mean, that's just the starting point. You know, what I'm doing is I'm just acknowledging what's happening in the moment. I'm acknowledging her pain, which is something I could never do in the past.
Yeah.
I was so fixed on my own righteousness, my own, you know, if you just would see it my way, we wouldn't be having this problem. This is bullshit. Yeah. You're making this shit up. This isn't real. But here's something interesting, Ione, that I realized, and I only realized this a few years ago. It's a boundary question. My boundary was being violated so often in relationship. There was a boundary of my partner assuming she knows what I'm thinking or feeling or what my agenda is. And so naturally I would be in my defense because I know that what she's saying isn't true for me.
Right.
But rather than just standing for the boundary of like, look, that's what you're doing right now is not okay.
Yeah.
You don't know what I'm feeling or thinking. Mm. And so stop. That's not helpful. Mm-hmm. And drawing that boundary, I wouldn't do that. Instead, I would say, what? That's not what I'm thinking. That you're making that up. That's bullshit. You know, I don't have that.
It becomes an argument. Yeah.
It becomes an argument rather than a boundary conversation.
Right.
And without that boundary conversation, what happens is, you know, she's going to, it doesn't feel good for her to be all in my business, running my world, trying to figure out and tell me how things are over here, because she's lost in a nightmare fantasy that it isn't real for me, but it's become real for her.
Yeah.
So she's acting horribly in a way that doesn't feel good, which is probably going to cause her to spiral into shame. Mm-hmm. Or at least just exacerbate her anger and frustration and fear and all that. And I'm also fighting off shame and defending, and it's horrible for everybody.
Mm-hmm,
so that what that boundary does, which my partner and I, we have that. That's a boundary that's real for both of us. It's alive. We've spoken it. We've talked about it. It's something that's alive for us.
Yeah.
Because of that boundary, that helps her, my partner, stay in her experience. Mm-hmm. Own her experience, which then becomes an invitation for me to care about her experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm not immediately sort of triggered into my defensiveness, which can still happen sometimes. But again, I'm in my own practice of, I'm getting defensive again. Okay, let me breathe. Let me drop my arms. Let me relax my shoulders. Let me turn to her. Let me, you know, modulate my tone of voice. Let me calm down.
Yeah.
Let me just say the words that even if I don't fully believe them right now, I know that they'll matter, which is, okay, babe, look, I'm with you in this. We're in this together.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like we both are in these practice. She's just owning what she's feeling rather than fantasizing about what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know, if it's like that's what that boundary does, is it allows us to both be in the room, to both be present, to have both our experiences validated so that then we can connect and we can come up with, you know, solutions if those need to be at all. And oftentimes we don't. Oftentimes all that's being asked for is connection.
Yeah.
We don't actually have to solve the thing we think we're fighting about.
And just misunderstanding. I think all the conflicts come down to just misunderstanding. So one of the things that I always seek to do in a confrontational situation is, like, rather than try and assert my point and why I'm right, try to understand where the confusion is, like why we're not, because most of the time once we understand each other, there's no conflict usually, even if that is, I'm just not happy in this relationship and I don't want to be with you. Like, even if that's the understanding, that explains a lot of the conflict. So how do couples then if they haven't, if this is something new to people, how do people then begin to work with boundaries? And is it sitting down face to face and being like, right, boundary number one, like what's the way that people?
Yeah, well, it can be tricky when we have decades of practicing no boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, I used a word in there before, invitation.
Yeah.
Boundaries create invitations. Most of us are practiced in obligations.
Hmm.
Either obligating the other to do something or feeling obligated to do something.
Hmm.
And so I really encourage people to get support with this. If this has been an issue for some time, work with a therapist, work with a coach. I think, you know, Sylvie and I, we have a boundaries program that helps people figure this stuff out. But get support, because if it's not easy to just go switch from one mode to another when you've been doing it for decades to all of a sudden just start having boundaries. And because what will happen is if you're in a relationship and you haven't had boundaries for a few years, or mm-hmm. what's going to happen is you're going to say, okay, I have a boundary now. And your partner's going to go, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe you.
Mm.
Or they just, it's like, it's really strange that conflict is familiar and comfortable to us. Unresolved conflict is almost grotesquely familiar to most of us. Again, it's what we watched our parents do. Even if they didn't fight, most of our parents didn't really love either each other. I mean, a lot of us saw, and again, not everybody, but if you were lucky to have parents who really knew how to love each other and connect with each other, still looking into the greater culture, you did. There's very few examples of that. Right. So, you know, that's why we need models for this. We do need help. I mean, Sylvie and I, there are still moments where we'll have some gap between us. And you said something, Ione, that I think is interesting, and it can be really challenging, you know, finding understanding.
Mm-hmm.
I find that often that's impossible. That actually often is seeking intellectual understanding so we understand why, man, that's a really slippery slope. And sometimes it could take months, years even, to understand, oh my God, I just realized the reason that I value privacy in a way that you don't is because when I was younger, you know, my mother, she would constantly go through all my things and she would violate my space, and I'm just and I didn't realize it has nothing to do with you wanting to share stuff on social media about our relationship or about your experience, whatever. I mean, holy shit. I just realized I was violated constantly as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And it might take a professional to help you discover that. It just might take months or years even for those memories to emerge. And so that's why it's like,
so a part of it is like reflection, then, you would say, whether that's working through it with a professional, but just sort of turning, like really looking into yourself about
it's absolutely
and
the key though is that you can still create connection even if you don't have intellectual understanding.
Okay.
And that's really the point that I want to make with this is, look, intellectual understanding is great and it can be so helpful. There are things that I know about my partner, again, it took years to understand why certain of her sensitivities are the way they are. And knowing them now that they're rooted in stuff that happened long before I ever showed up is really helpful. Mm-hmm. But some of that stuff, it's taken us 3 years to figure out what those are, to get that understanding. In the meantime, what's far more useful in the moment is, like I said, when these moments of disagreement arise, you know, we're two people. We have different comfort zones. We have different sensitivities. My sensitivities aren't hers and vice versa. So something may trigger her. It's completely within my comfort zone. So my initial reaction is, what the hell is wrong with you? Mm-hmm. this isn't a thing. If I stay there, we're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
And not in the ways we want to be.
not in the fun way.
Not in the fun ways, like in the awful, tragic ways.
Yeah.
You know. So rather, just, you know, and it's such an intimate relationship, takes such courage, and it's such a spiritual, it is a spiritual practice, because it really requires, you know, I'll just own this for myself, but it really requires me to be in uncertainty, to rest in uncertainty, to be willing to not know what is happening in this moment. But that, with that that does is it allows me, again, it's a body practice. It's staying mm-hmm. connected to my heart, to my body, breathing deeply, remaining as calm as I can, even as my, you know, my own brain, my triggers are freaking out, going, oh my God, danger, 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 danger. Your freedom's going to be taken away from you, or you're going to be bossed around, or she's going to accuse you of things like the ex-girlfriend did that you're not doing. All those triggers are going off. Ooh, rather than reacting from that place, remembering, hey, this is the woman I love. This is the woman I'm choosing to be in relationship with, to be in partnership with. So let's be partners in this.
Yeah.
Right. And getting beneath all that noise and just connecting with her in the moment. There's a statistic I knew that I think is one of the most interesting and important statistics for couple when it comes to couples. And it's this, and it was researched by the Gottman Institute. Anyone who studies relationships knows all about the Gottman Institute. They've been studying couples in a laboratory setting for decades now. They can predict with 95% accuracy
if people will stay together.
Well, not even that. Yes, definitely that. That's a different statistic, but yes, they can do that. But by watching couples have a conversation, they can predict with 95% accuracy which way that conversation will go, just that conversation, whether it will end positively or negatively, by what happens in the first 3 minutes.
Wow.
Three minutes.
And what are some of those key things?
So, what that tells you is that in those 3 minutes, we have a lot of agency. Like there's a window where we can, look, you're not going to get intellectual understanding in most cases in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I mean. That could take 3 months, three years, but in 3 minutes, you can determine with 95% accuracy. So there are certain things, indicators, like if there's contempt in those first 3 minutes. Again, geez, what's wrong with you? You know, this isn't a thing, you're making this shit up. Mm-hmm. That's not gonna go well. That conversation's not gonna go well. And this is something that Sylvie and I also, we teach in our conflict to connection program, because these 3 minutes, I mean, again, you can learn skills.
Yeah.
For example, one of the things one of my favorite distinctions, which we don't have time to go into today, and we do teach this in the conflict to connection program, hope it's okay that I say that, is these 7 non-connecting responses that, you know, like educating, you know, I love to educate my partner when she's upset about something. She hates being educated.
Yeah, I can imagine. As you said that, I was like, I don't know, that's a good idea.
Hey, it's a terrible idea, but I always think it's a great idea, because I think, you know, hey, look, I'm going to educate you, and then you'll feel better, and, you know, you'll feel the truth set you free. And it's so arrogant and ridiculous, but it comes from a good place.
Yeah.
But it's just, and I might even be right, but it's not connecting.
Yeah.
That's the key. It's not a connecting response to her upset.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that in those first 3 minutes, as I shared with you earlier, when you asked me, what would I do now looking back, you know, taking a deep breath, speaking in a calm tone, that immediately can begin to create connection with her because especially, you know, in a heterosexual context, you know, a woman's body, a woman, she's listening for nonverbal cues. Am I safe right now?
Right, right.
And my tone of voice communicate, doesn't even matter so much what I'm saying. I mean, it matters, but it's less important what I'm saying. Because if I'm saying, God, I love you, Jesus, I'm right here. I'm here. We're in this together. She's not going to feel safe at all. Yeah. There's so much contempt in the tone of my voice.
Right.
But if I'm like earlier, the demonstration is just, hey, I'm here with you. I'm here with you. We're in this together. It's okay. You're allowed to feel what you feel. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay if you're allowed to be angry at me. What? Now all of a sudden, like, notice I'm beginning to just, you know, the tone of voice, certainly some words that are going to help her nervous system relax.
Yeah.
So whatever's going on for her, she's at least getting a signal from me that, okay, he's safe. I'm safe. Mm-hmm. Whatever she's freaking out about in her brain.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, I'm freaking out at the same time in my own brain. That's the way this happens.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I'd be curious to know what the other ones are of those studies. It was pretty cool. I wanted to touch a bit more on some of the boundaries. Mm-hmm. Can you give some examples of healthy boundaries? And obviously it's very dependent on people. Like there's some people that might be open to open Absolutely. Relationships and things like that. But like, what are some of the common ones that you found helps couples? And I guess in friendships too, it doesn't have to be romantic relationships.
Totally.
Any relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the most helpful boundaries that I've discovered for myself, especially, but for all couples is don't tell me what I'm thinking or feeling. Mm-hmm. That's a massive boundary. That's so important. It's so helpful. Another boundary is, validating feelings. In other words, don't dismiss feelings. Hmm. Almost in every relationship, one partner is what I call the feelings fighter. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm the freedom fighter in my relationship. I'm fighting for our freedom constantly. You know, truth will set you free. That's kind of why I want to educate and I want to explain. I want the truth, you know, and a lot of men tend to orient around that type of a way of showing up and that sort of freedom fighters. And it's not always, sometimes it is a woman who's the freedom fighter in the relationship. Sometimes we trade back and forth, but one partner is almost always more of my partner. She's definitely the feelings fighter. You know, she's fighting for feelings, which I love. She's being a stand for the body, for the human body, for, hey, being here present in the moment, connected to heart, connected to my nervous system, really checked in to the moment rather than checked out into my ideas, mm-hmm. you know? So if I'm going to dismiss feelings like, oh, those are just made up, they're not real. That's devastating to a core value of my partner, not just core value, but to her being. Right. So that's a really important boundary. We don't get to dismiss feelings.
Okay.
Feelings are welcome. Mm-hmm. Right. Now that's, again, that's one that a lot of people, I mean, I think most relationships experience. Mm. And it's a boundary that I think most relationships violate consistently. And also, you know, it's important to notice, you know, for anyone listening, because we violate our own boundaries all the time. And that's a boundary. We dismiss our own feelings. Mm-hmm. Like, I shouldn't feel this way. You know, we rationalize away what we're feeling and then we don't really show up with our authenticity in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And then our partner, you know, we're upset at our partner for not being present with us. Well, but we're not being present with ourselves.
Yeah.
Like we're not really offering the truth of our experience, certainly not in a way that can be heard by our partner.
Right.
Anyway, that's another boundary, you know, and then, I mean, you said it, Ione, every couple really has to decide for themselves what their boundaries are. There are some couples who, what do I want to say here? Like name calling, for example, you know, no name calling. That can be, and it was for me a long time ago, that was a really essential boundary for me. I remember I was married to a French woman in France, lived in Bordeaux right out of the military, again, when I was really disconnected from my body. She called me an asshole one morning. Mm-hmm. I left for 3 days. Mm. I didn't come home for 3 days. That was such a violation. Mm-hmm. You know, and as I've done a lot of my inner work, my inner growth work, it's still not something that's welcome in my relationship. But if in a moment of sort of upset or just a moment of even playfulness. I mean, I wouldn't even allow that playfully.
Yeah. Yeah.
20 years ago. Don't even playfully call me an asshole.
Well, this is interesting now because like, I think that is a good boundary, but then it's also like, now I'm imagining like a very frustrated pent up person that is like, my boundaries are don't call me any names. Don't do this. And then it just might become so limiting. And so like what you're recognizing is that was where you were at. And it was like, not even, this isn't even funny. I'm going to go for 3 days if you dare do this. So then there'll be people there that are setting their boundaries and then there'll be kind of more mindful, people that have done the work themselves setting their boundaries. And I think that's important.
It is
like the distinction.
It's really the difference.
Your headspace, where you're setting your boundaries at, where you're at with yourself.
It's really the difference between a boundary and a wall. You know, a wall lets nothing in.
Yeah. Ooh, that's good.
A wall keeps everything out.
Yeah.
Even the fun, good stuff.
Yeah.
And a boundary lets the good stuff in, but keeps the bad stuff out.
Right.
And that's why, you know, play, like my partner and I now playfully, we can say things like, fuck you, playfully. If we were to say, fuck you, you know, and out of anger, that is not okay.
Yeah.
But 20 years ago, you couldn't say that at all to me, playfully or otherwise.
Right. Wow. You know,
'cause it was a wall. It wasn't a boundary. It was a wall.
Yeah.
So there's a model that I work with in intimacy, the three stages model, which I learned from David Data's work, but I've adopted. And there's a lot of, it's sort of the codependency to interdependence model. And, you know, it's the three stages. And that second stage, you know, the graduation from codependence is not interdependence, it's independence. And that's what boundaries are all about, creating independence, really finding, okay, where do I exist? Where are my boundaries so that, you know, this is where I feel safe. This is where I feel nurtured. This is sort of the container within which, oh, I can relax and I can function and I can show up.
Yeah.
Right? That's the importance of boundaries. And we can't do, you know, that interdependence, that third stage, which all of us yearn for, but very few of us know how to do.
Give me the definition of interdependent, like codependence and interdependence, just for clarity.
So I'll say it like this. So codependence, there's a motto. Each stage kind of has its own slogan, its own motto. Codependence says this: I need you to be a certain way so that I can be okay.
Wow. Yeah. Whew.
My well-being depends on you. And by you, you could be my bank account. Like, I'm not okay if I don't have a certain amount of money, et cetera. But, you know, or if you don't talk to me, or if you don't show up this way or that way, then I'm going to be miserable. That's codependence.
Okay.
Independence, and it's funny, but it's fascinating because I had no concept of these stages. But when I got out of that 5-year relationship, which was very much a codependent relationship, I remember at the end of it, because I had done so much to try to please this woman I mean, it's ironic because my arms crossed. I didn't look like I was pleasing, but I was so frustrated because nothing I would do would work. I needed everything to work. And that's a codependent statement, by the way. Yeah. If I'm going to do this, it better work.
Yeah.
That's codependency. If I'm going to do this, you better show up differently. And that doesn't work. It's a recipe for disaster. So my my motto, I remember I would say this, like, okay, it's like I planted my stake in the ground. I am done trying to make anyone else happy. No, you are not responsible for my well-being, and I'm not going to be responsible for yours.
That's independence.
That's independence. Now, it kind of starts with a little bit of a militant tone. I am not, you know, because we're tired, we're exhausted, we're frustrated from being abused and codependence, from abusing and being abused. So codependence or independence is, okay, I'm responsible for my happiness and you're responsible for yours. That's independence. I got me, you got you.
Okay.
And a lot of relationships, that's kind of our cultural ideal right now. I got me, you got you. We see it everywhere in intimacy, but also in politics. I'll take care of me, you take care of you. It's the freedom model. I'm free to do me. You got to be free to do you. And, you know, we'll hopefully we can find some common ground, but if not, fuck you.
Yeah.
So when we do our boundary work, when we integrate and you know, the third stage is really built on that second stage practice of boundaries, of taking care of myself, of honoring your right to take care of yourself. And so the third stage is the motto of the third stage is, I don't need you, but I'm going to allow myself to need you. It feels good to need you, even though I don't actually need you. So it's kind of paradoxical. It's sort of a, hey, I am good. I can do me on my own, but it's so much more fun to allow myself to depend on you.
Yeah.
Right?
That's so fun. I had a very wise friend of mine called Trance say this to me the other day, because I always see myself as a very independent woman. And I'd been going on dates with guys that were finding me intimidating. And I said, why, to one guy? And he said, because you don't need me. Like, I just tell you don't need me. And I was like, yeah, it's true. And my friend was like, yeah, of course you don't need him. But like, what does a guy say to that? Yeah, I don't need you. Okay. So then like, where does he go? Like, what's the point? And so my friend was saying that like, it's okay to not need somebody. You don't need someone to pay your bills or take care of you, but you want that. You want to have some. So that's exactly your definition of the interdependence.
Absolutely. And that's, I think it is a fascinating, we all want to be needed. I mean, Ione, in relationship, you want to be needed in some way. I mean, you don't want to take care of a guy, like be his mother. Which is what most men in first stage want. They want a mommy, really. And that's not sexy.
No.
For a minute. People play that if you're into that kind of stuff, but you know.
Not for a lifetime. Yeah.
Not for a lifetime. Not at all. Or even for more than a few, you know. But in the end, you know, you have gifts to offer. And if a guy, if a man doesn't allow himself to need your gifts, and this has been a big thing in my own relationship, like my partner is amazing at giving comfort, emotional comfort. But see, I grew up, no one ever comforted me. So I didn't even know that was a thing. Like I got me. It's like, no, I'll comfort me. I got me. Well, that's not interesting to my partner. That feels like, well, what am I here for then?
Right.
And so it's been a real journey of healing for me and courage even for me to allow myself to cry, to feel, to bring to her the things that I'm struggling with so that she can comfort tell me, you. Hey, I love you. It's going to be okay. I'm with you. And there's that sort of shallow masculine, you know, man in me is like, what do you mean? I know it's going to be okay. I'll make everything okay. I got this, you know, but I got to put that down. You know, that shield, that doesn't serve our intimacy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, being able to put that down is a practice. It takes courage. It's not easy.
Yeah.
But it deepens our intimacy. It makes my partner feel needed.
Yeah.
And it makes it connects us at a deeper level. So, you know, I love doing intimate relationship work, certainly in my own intimate relationship, but also working with others because it is such a profoundly just spiritual and liberating and healing domain experience. Yeah.
So with that work, because you talk about creating, repairing connection in intimacy, like what are some of the things that you do to help people facilitate that? And what are some things that people can do themselves to connect in intimacy with a partner?
One of the first things that I'll often do with a couple is we'll start to explore this distinction between story and phenomenon. This is something that I learned from, I studied Chinese five elements acupuncture many, many years ago, the healing arts. And I learned this from my teacher, Bob Duggan, who sadly passed away a few years ago. But this distinction of story versus phenomenon. Phenomenon being, what am I feeling? Am I feeling in my body? What's actually going on in my body? The feelings and emotions that are present with me right now. That's the phenomenon. As an example, like, okay, I notice I have tightness in my shoulder. I notice my belly feels a little bloated. I notice in a couple, in an intimate relationship, what will often happen is, I'm feeling scared. I'm feeling nervous. I'm feeling afraid. I'm feeling jealous. I'm feeling upset. I'm feeling right. But that's phenomenon. It's happening in the body in the moment. Story is, you're doing this to me. You clearly want to be with another woman, or you're not being considerate to my needs, or one of my favorites, you don't care about me. Oh, what a horrible thing to say to your partner.
Assumptions, these assumptions that are made up stories. Yeah.
That's right. Another way of languaging it is assumptions. But and you might think you're right. You might have evidence that suggests, but that's why this distinction is so important, because when we're in the story, we're almost certainly violating our partner's right to have their own experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it gets awful very quickly. That's where defense comes up. So story versus phenomenon, starting to go through that distinction starts to allow a couple to just speak about their experience. Again, it creates invitation where before there was a lot of obligation going on. And so that's just one example of kind of a first distinction that we'll work with. Another one of the distinctions that I love to work with is this masculine feminine values distinction. And that's something that even in same-sex relationships, there are masculine and feminine values at play. Because what I'll find often, as I said this earlier, you know, one partner is usually fighting for freedom and the other is usually fighting for connection, for, you know, for feelings. And what happens is, and gosh, you know, I'm so susceptible to this because I'm such a freedom fighter. And I had this conversation with my partner just the other day that, look, I value freedom so highly that, you know, she has so much freedom. in a way, I feel like she has more freedom than I do in the relationship, only because that's my value. I stand mm-hmm. for it. Mm-hmm. So I give that to her. Mm-hmm. But the irony is she doesn't want freedom so much as she wants connection.
Mm.
And so this can be a source of real frustration. And you'll see this a lot, what I call the objections. There's the masculine objection and the feminine objection. And this is where a lot of fights kind of orient around these two objections. And so one person is upset about, essentially, don't tell me what to do. Don't control me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the masculine objection. And the other partner is wrapped around the feminine objection, which is, don't abandon me. Don't leave me alone in this.
Mm-hmm.
And when we don't realize that that's what's going on, we trigger the hell into each other.
Yeah.
Because the partner who's fearing, and again, it's not a man-woman thing. I mean, I have the don't abandon me objection as well.
Mm.
But when I'm reacting from the don't abandon me, don't leave me alone in this, if I'm unconscious about it, I'm going to say things that will feel constricting to her freedom.
Yeah.
Like, you better get back in here. Don't you dare leave the room when this is happening. You know, that's my abandon. Don't you, you know, I'm giving direction, which essentially takes away her agency to
right.
make her own choices.
Right.
And if she's locked in her, that freedom, don't tell me what to do objection. The moment I say, don't you leave this room, she's going to say, fuck off, I'm out of here. Don't you tell me what to do. I don't give a shit about what's, you know, it's sort of that. And we don't realize that, again, there's another way. When we start to, you know, this is one of the things that, this is some of the work that I love doing, because it really, you know, in those moments, we're adversaries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when relationships sucks. That's when two really good people can create a nasty mess of things, because
yeah.
we become quickly adversarial.
Yeah.
And relationship is supposed to be a partnership.
Yeah.
And by just seeing, so that's another one of the distinctions I love to work with, because once you identify that, when I realize, let's say my partner is caught in the freedom objection, the masculine objection, I can remind her. And for us, you know, I'm using that to sort of be more politically correct. The truth is, I'm the one that's always caught in the freedom objection.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
majority. Mm-hmm. She's generally caught in the connection objection. Like, don't leave me alone in this.
Yeah.
Even meaning, don't run away into your head and disconnect from your body and I can't feel you.
Yeah.
You know, that's where for me, saying the words, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm, you know, connecting language.
Yeah.
You know, she'll say to me, hey, there's nothing you have to do different. There's nothing you have to fix. There's nothing you have to, like, you're free. I'm not trying to take away your freedom or tell you what to do or how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Those words are incredibly comforting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I can go, oh, okay. Sort of like a, ooh, okay, all right. She's not asking me to do something that I don't want to do, which is a violation of my freedom in a way. So,
right.
You know, just work, those little things can then set the ground. We come back into partnership and now we can start to have a substantive, if we need to, conversation about what's actually going on and what
yeah.
actually may need to happen.
And here's what I'm noticing too, because you said that, like, if she just says, can you, you know, I'm not trying to take anything, I don't want you to do anything, but here's I'm just inviting you just to connect with me and be present with me. Like, then that's not kind of making anyone doing it. It's that invitation, which is a good use of language. But then there must just be people that just don't want to, like, sort of to be, lean into, like, be there with you. I don't want to hear you. You know, sometimes you say,
totally.
You say the words,
yeah.
You know, even if you don't quite believe them, but you know that they're in that moment, that's what's necessary and that works. So yeah. there has to be a willingness from both people
Absolutely.
To want to make it work. And then
Absolutely.
Sometimes if you're with someone that just doesn't want to do any of that work,
yeah.
knowing when to walk away from that.
Yeah, I think, you know, that to me comes down to a shared purpose. Why are you in this relationship together?
Yeah.
Is it just because you just want to have kids and co-parent? Okay, well then maybe this work isn't necessary for you, but mm. you're not going to have a good intimacy.
Right.
But if you're in this because you want to grow in love, then you absolutely need willingness on both partners to do what is often uncomfortable inner work
yeah.
in order to grow.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you don't have the mutual willingness, that's torture.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And people stay in it for decades.
Oh, I know. It's so sad. And then also, like, especially if they're doing it for kids as well, I just think, like, this, you're giving kids an example of this is what a relationship is. And I know they do it because they want what's best for their kids, but I'm like, yeah. just don't. It's not a healthy thing to be showing of a relationship, like disconnected people with no intimacy. That's not what we should be aspiring to, or that you should be setting as an example. But anyway, it's very complicated for people. This has been so I've got so much from this. I bloody love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
thank you as well for offering to give away a spot on your boundaries course. It's Boundaries, Relationships Suck Without Them. Can you tell us a little bit about that course, please?
Yeah. So the Boundaries, Relationships Suck Without Them, essentially, this is something that my partner, Sylvie Kukasian, and I created together. And we teach you how to first understand what your own boundaries are, how to distinguish between requests versus requirements. A lot of relationships come off the rails because people pretend their requirements are requests and they pretend their requests are requirements. So and we help you get clear around that difference. And then but my favorite part of the whole thing is we actually give you scripts. We give you the language in different scenarios. You know, there are sexual boundaries. There are boundaries around like flirtation, potential flirtations with other, you know, people of the opposite sex, or friendships with people that might be threatened, all those kinds of things. So we give you scripts, actual language that you can use to communicate boundaries in a way that are honoring of your partner and owning of your own boundaries. That's the key to maintaining partnership. So, and then we have some different scenarios. I can't even remember what they are right now, but we give you specific, kind of walk you through specific scenarios, how to navigate these situations. As I said, one, like your partner uses disrespectful language. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How do you communicate a boundary around that in a way that doesn't just invite more disrespectful language?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So things like that. So that's the Boundaries program. I love it. We're really proud of it and we love it.
So it's an online one that people can get access to all the time. And I would encourage that, like, please enter to win this, of course. But like, if you want to work on boundaries, seriously consider this as just doing it anyway. And then if you win it, give it to a friend or a loved one.
Yeah.
And you and Sylvie also have one that you do together, the Conflict to Connection program. And that's online, but do you also do things in person?
So both Sylvie and I work with, she's a therapist, so she has some clients that she works with in person, but she also does coaching, so she works with people online as well. Mm. But you know, we're always evolving this program and the different things that we do. So sometimes we'll have live components to the program. We are going to be doing retreats in the future, couples retreats, and I mean, she and I are just getting started. We've been together for 4 years, and our work is really just starting to kind of overlap and merge in certain ways. And we're always going to do our own thing, but it's always evolving. So
very cool.
You know, we're in the middle of figuring some how to make that program even more impactful. And so if you do enroll in it now, you get whatever we continue to innovate and create with that program. You're a part of it.
That's amazing. And so very cool. And it must be exciting. I'm glad that you're kind of finding the ways of, you know, bringing your skill set together. Yeah. And that's cool.
It is.
And so lastly, is it fair to say that you mainly work with men, and do you have things coming up, like events for men coming up?
So I don't mainly just work with men. Okay. I do work with women also, but I think more and more my work is going in the direction of serving men. You know, I have a new podcast called Men This Way, which, because again, I'm 45, as I said, years exquisitely aged. And where are my elders? Where are my elders? There was just very few men that I've been exposed to that I look up to and admire. And I realize that I'm really stepping into that role as elder. And so, that's a whole other podcast. more and more I'm really, as I step into that role, I'm realizing the need for men to have that elder energy, that mentor energy in their lives. And I'm actually leaving, and when this podcast comes out, I'll be at a retreat in Norway helping to make that retreat happen and do some co-facilitating there. And more and more, I mean, just join my email list on my website, you know, brianreeves.com, because that's where you'll get to learn what's unfolding for me. I'm so excited to do more retreats around the world for men, especially. Mm-hmm. I just have great visions for that, but then the time is coming. So, yeah.
Excellent. Just to think of how far you've come, you know, from that man in the military that was so disconnected just all this work. Like, it's such a, I mean, I literally have just spoken to you for an hour, but it's just such a huge journey. Like, it's pretty cool. And then I think it is important that you now continue to share this wisdom and growth and help other people on that path too. So
thank you
for all your work.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
This has been awesome. Guys, to find out more about Brian, brianreeves.com, Brian with a Y. We'll have links to everything in the show notes where you can follow him on social and how you can sign up for that giveaway. And I also just encourage you, if boundaries are a thing that you know you need to work on, consider doing one of these programs. Brian, this has been really fun. Thank you so much.
But Ione, this has been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed this conversation with you. Thank you for inviting me on.
My pleasure. Thank you. Take care, everyone. I'll see you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Uplifting Content Podcast with me, Ione Butler. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review so that more people can find it. And to make sure you never miss a beat, subscribe to our weekly dose of uplifting content, which is an email from me about the best of uplifting content from that week, be it giveaways, videos, interviews, all the good stuff. And as a bonus, when you subscribe, you'll get 100 of our inspirational memes to share on your social media. The sign-up link is in the show notes. See you next time.